Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. Dramatic scenes coming out of Haiti in recent weeks, an island nation descending into chaos following the 2021 assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. Now, neocolonial powers planning to intervene. Today, we'll sort out the facts from the fiction. All right, let's get into the MO. It's arguably the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. It's been plagued by corruption scandal after scandal, including the assassination of the president back in 2021. And due to its geographical location, has been hit hard by Mother Nature, hurricanes, earthquakes, and the like. And since last year, has had no elected leaders sitting in official offices. So what's to become of Haiti's nearly 12 million residents who have watched their cities become besieged by criminal gangs and murder rampages? Here to break down what's really going on in Haiti is friend of the show, is Dan Cohen. Dan is an independent journalist, filmmaker, and founder of Uncaptured Media. You can see and support Dan's work at uncaptured.media and follow him on Twitter at DanCohen3000. Dan, good to see you.
Great to be with you, Manila.
So you were recently in Haiti just before all this new chaos erupted, and then suddenly a new face out of Haiti propelled into the spotlight, a guy called Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier. Can you tell us what you know about him and why you think the mainstream media and social media voices are characterizing him as this evil and cannibalistic gang leader over there in Haiti? I mean, what or who does such a narrative even serve?
Well, I and my colleague Kim Ives of Haiti Liberté are really the only independent journalists to interview Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, who has suddenly become a household name. And otherwise, it's all mainstream media. So fortunately, we do know exactly who Barbecue, as he's known, is, what his background is, what he's about. And essentially, Haiti is undergoing a revolution right now. And Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier is the leader of that. Essentially, he is a former police officer who was an exemplary cop in an anti-gang squad, and he was basically thrown under the bus by the government at the time in 2019 for an operation that went awry, and that basically radicalized him, and he realized that the system cannot be reformed. It needs to go. We basically have to have a revolution so Haiti's masses can actually benefit, can be able to live. And he began a process of not only providing, as a social leader in his own neighborhood where he lived, providing clean water, after-school education and programming for kids, protection from criminals, and programs like that. He began attempting to unite different neighborhoods in Haiti's slums, which are among the poorest in the world, in an effort to basically bring these neighborhoods together, that there were fights between them, in order to have a revolution. And so that is basically what he has accomplished in many ways. There is now a coalition of armed groups, neighborhood armed groups, called Vivre Ensemble, which means living together. And this coalition consists of anti-crime armed groups that Jimmy Cherizier is the spokesman and leader of. And this is a group called the Revolutionary Forces of the G9. And the G9 has battled against a criminal federation called the JPEP, the G People. And so all the time that he has battled against this criminal group, these criminal armed groups of basically from the poor neighborhoods, he said, guys, let's stop fighting and unite. And let's have a revolution against the people who give us these weapons in order to kill each other and burn down businesses and basically make the country uninhabitable and horrible to live in. And so the U.S. saw what this project was before I did, before my colleagues at Haiti Liberté, who I, the largest Haitian weekly newspaper where Kim Ives is the English editor, they saw this before any of us. And so they started demonizing him. They had a smear campaign very similar to, you know, what they do to any leader they don't like. Assad, Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, Maduro, anybody. They come up with these smears against him. They've accused him through the National Endowment for Democracy, which funds the primary so-called human rights organization in Haiti. They've accused him of a series of massacres, which we've investigated thoroughly, and they were not massacres at all, let alone Cherizier's involvement in what went on. So now he's basically stepped into the spotlight, and there is an effort by the U.S. to get an international, basically, invasion into Haiti in order to stamp out this revolution that Cherizier is leading.
Ah, the NED. Viewers of this program are well aware of them. And what about this moniker, barbecue? Is that really tied to cannibalism?
Right. If you know, are surfing on X, formerly known as Twitter, the last few weeks, you'll suddenly see cannibals in Haiti. And there was this video that went around of an actual gang member in Haiti eating someone he had burned, his body was burned, and the guy was eating him. It's a horrible video. And that suddenly became barbecue was doing that, and that's how he got his name, because he likes to burn people and eat them. But it's totally false. That video is from 2021 in a completely different part of the country than the capital where Cherizier lives. And he actually fights against, his whole program has been fighting against criminal gangs who terrorize the country like that. So his name, Barbecue, actually, he got that name when he was a kid because there were a lot of Jimmies in his neighborhood and his mother sold grilled meat. She was like a meat vendor on the street. And so he became Jimmy Barbecue. That's how he got the name.
Now, before we get into the living conditions in Haiti, I'd like for us to talk a little bit about the political situation there following the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse back in 2021. Ariel Henry, who Moïse himself tapped to be prime minister, Henry was linked allegedly to Moïse's murder. He's been in charge, though, ever since, and many other nations seem to simply accept this whole situation. But now with Henry out of the country, unable to return, is this a signal of the full collapse of the government there?
Absolutely. The interim prime minister, Ariel Henry, who, as you said, is a top suspect in the assassination of the president, Jovenel Moïse, who appointed him as prime minister 2 days before he was assassinated. And Ariel Henry was basically anointed by the United States. So he was never elected, but he became basically the head of state, the de facto head of state in Haiti for the last nearly 3 years. And the government of Haiti has now no elected officials and hasn't had elected officials for over a year. So-called democracy that the U.S. has tried to impose on Haiti has become a total sham. The president was assassinated. The prime minister was never elected. And basically, the elites fund these different armed groups, so-called gangs that you hear about, that kidnap people, that terrorize the population, in very, very serious ways. And so what's happened is those armed groups have gotten out of the control of the sort of oligarchs of the regime. They basically became autonomous to some degree. And that's when Cherizier was preaching to them, let's unite against the real gangsters, the real elite criminals who are running our country, and, you know, take all of the profits from the sweatshops and buy villas in the Dominican Republic or in France or Canada or the U.S. And, you know, they don't actually love Haiti. They're not actually part of this country. They just treat it as a piggy bank is really what Cherizier says. So let's take back the country for Haitians rather than some kind of transnational elite. So the government is totally in shambles. Ariel Henry, is the U.S. puppet. He went to Kenya, actually, of all places, Kenya, to sign an agreement with the Kenyan president, William Ruto, to have Kenyan police special forces come and invade Haiti and fight these so-called gangs, fight these armed groups. And this is all organized by the United States. Kenya is the top vassal in East Africa of the U.S., receives, I think, more military aid than anywhere in Africa except for Egypt. And so basically the U.S. is desperate to find someone to go in and send their troops to fight these armed groups to invade. And they couldn't get, most countries wouldn't do it or would contribute maybe a few people. So Kenya is supposed to send 1,000 police forces. Kenya has a notorious history with death squads that are very, very brutal. And also Benin has offered now to send 2,000. So it's kind of a coalition of the willing sort of thing where the U.S. is desperate to stamp out this revolution.
Wow. Okay. So Henri went to ask for intervention. Okay. So as we mentioned a little earlier, you just returned from Haiti. You've been many times filming a multi-part docuseries. What are the living conditions like for the average Haitian? I mean, did you see any parts of the country that are still functioning as it did before this new chaos ensued?
The picture that you get of total, absolute chaos in Haiti from the media is not really true. I mean, there's still people going about their daily lives. However, what daily life is for the majority of Haitians is poverty. If you go to neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince, in the capital, you fly right in, and right next to the airport is the slum of Cité Soleil, which was created in the 1970s by the U.S.-backed Duvalier dictatorship as some kind of, as like a factory, area of factories that are going to bring prosperity to the masses and this kind of thing. But what actually happened is, and you had many, many thousands of people leave their agricultural traditional lifestyle and go live basically in slums and work into these factories. And so in Cité Soleil, it's the most extreme form of poverty I've ever witnessed anywhere. I mean, you have people living below, they live in literal sewage, in tin shacks and sewage. Every time it rains, sewage from the entire city of Port-au-Prince that comes down the hill through these canals floods into their tin shacks. It's unavoidable. So this is literally almost a daily process because you're in the Caribbean. There's no clean drinking water, for example. People collect water to drink from their rooftop on top of these tin shacks, or they dig basically small holes in the ground and water collects in there and they drink that. Cholera is very common. I mean, you can imagine if you're just getting water from the ground, what kind of pathogens, what kind of diseases are in there. So there's no services from the state. There's no security. There's no anything. These are the most exploited people in the world. And so that's the regular situation that has been imposed on Haiti by the U.S. neoliberal model. And people are rising up in rejection of that. And so you see in our documentary, Another Vision, that I made with Kim Ives of Haiti Liberté, you basically see these conditions. You see how people, and also in other reporting actually did for Redacted is really where you see this stuff, where we went into the slums like that. And you see the conditions people are living in. And you see Cherizier in the documentary, you see Cherizier going into these slums and talking to these people and being like, we cannot accept this. This isn't a normal way to live. We have to have dignity. We have to find a way to get food. And, you know, the only way to do that is to have a revolution.
All right, coming up next, 3 years on, and it's an international whodunit case. Now the former First Lady of Haiti indicted for ties to her husband's murder. We'll discuss it when we return with Dan Cohen. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
Welcome back to The MO. I'm Anila Chan. Dan Cohen, founder of Uncaptured Media, is back. Thanks for sticking around with us, Dan. So as we were saying, in 2021, when Jovenel Moise was assassinated in his home, in his own bed, his wife was also shot, but she survived. In the following years, we've seen a multinational web of, assassins, of plotters, people in Miami to Colombia, just this wide-ranging whodunit case. Recently, his widow, Martine, she was among the latest bunch of people that were charged with Jovenel Moise's murder. So the plot continues to thicken. What more can you tell us about this murder case, especially the cui bono?
Yeah, you described it pretty well, this kind of international web of assassins and hitmen. It was actually Colombian former soldiers who pulled the trigger, and they were among a group who apparently didn't know what was going on. There are DEA informants involved. There is testimony from a former DEA chief that the CIA, knew exactly what was going on. It's pretty hard to believe that the U.S. Embassy or the CIA or basically the intelligence apparatus doesn't know who did it. And they've come up with different fall guys. But the reality is, if you look at who the enemies of Jovenel Moise were, then it becomes pretty clear. And, my sources in elite circles in Haiti have confirmed this to me, that basically the oligarchs who are tied to the U.S. in Haiti got together and decided to kill Jovenel Moise because basically he had turned against them. He was put in the presidency by the former president, Michel Martelly, who was himself put in by Hillary Clinton when she was the Secretary of State in the Obama administration. And Martelly tapped Jovenel Moise because he was basically unknown in order to do his bidding. Jovenel Moise was a banana exporter from the north of the country, not really a politician or from the political machine. And so he was put in as a puppet. And, we saw that he acted as a puppet at first. President Trump brought him to Mar-a-Lago to browbeat him into supporting Juan Guaido in Venezuela, for example. But Jovenel Moise wanted to have some kind of legacy for himself to impact the country in a positive way. And so he started looking to create development projects in Haiti, particularly in the rural areas that he is from. And in order to do that, he needed money. And there was a huge amount of money that was basically disappeared by Michel Martelly and his cronies called the Petrocaribe Fund, which was basically an interest-free loan given by Venezuela during the Chavez and Preval years. And that money was gone. So he basically went to the oligarchs who put him in and said, well, I need some money for these development projects. And they said, no, you don't understand. You work for us. And so Jovenel Moise began to look at the big contracts they had with utilities, where these guys were making huge amounts of money. And he started to prosecute them in using the courts to go after them. He also began looking away from the U.S. Unipolar order. He went to Turkey. He had some contact, I think, with the Russians through the Russian ambassador in Venezuela, for example. Haiti is also one of the, I think, only 12 or 13 countries in the world that recognizes Taiwan. So it's very important for it on the for a number of reasons, but geopolitically. So when Moise started to kind of turn away and look elsewhere, he suddenly was murdered. So it's clear that basically the elites of Haiti got together and decided to assassinate him. And there's no way the U.S. doesn't know about it. They've tried to put a lot of Fall Guys forward. I think that's what Martine Moise, his wife, is too. I mean, she got shot next to her husband. You know, they were hiding under the bed and she got shot too. So that's a pretty shaky story, I would say, that she would have gunmen come in, murder her husband, shoot her too, in order to what, benefit in some way? How is she benefiting? But it's, you know, you could, it just says everything that we don't ultimately know who the intellectual authors of this country are. You can imagine if that happened, you know, in a country tied to Russia or in Russia itself, how the U.S. media would seize on this. But the president of Haiti gets assassinated by some guys who are probably tied to the U.S., a bunch of mercenaries, and it's basically just yesterday's news.
All right. So it sounds like Moise's conscience took over, and that ultimately resulted in his death. And, you know, this really shady story surrounding his wife. Well, let's dive deeper then into Haiti's history. Haiti won its independence from France back in 1804, but when the U.S. went in with a violent occupation, the U.S. stayed there on the island for roughly 20 years into the early 1900s. The U.S. continued to control Haiti's public finances all the way up until 1947, and by then, taking some 40% of the country's national income to service debts to the U.S. and debts to France. Some of that debt to France was reparations to the slaveholders. How much of that deep history plays into Haiti's economic problems today?
Exactly. Haiti was the first and remains the only country to be a successful slave uprising. It really set a precedent and led to the end of chattel slavery in the Western Hemisphere. So anyone who's glad to not be in a slavery system today in the Americas, including here in the United States, should owe in part thanks to Haiti. And ever since then, as you described very well, Manila, the U.S. has punished Haiti for resisting, for refusing to be slaves. I mean, you laid out the history quite well. We can, you know, go even more recent into the 1990 when Jean-Bertrand Aristide, a theologian priest, was elected in a landslide popular vote, the country's first democratically elected president. And several months later, he was overthrown in a U.S. orchestrated coup d'etat, and Haiti was thrown into shambles. He was actually put in 1994. He was put back into power by the Clintons in 1994, only to be once again couped by the United States in 2004, 10 years later. So ever since that coup, Haiti has been in really a downward spiral. Where the state has basically been gutted. Haiti is unable to support itself. It's lost its sovereignty. Decisions are made here in Washington or in hotel rooms high in the hills above Port-au-Prince where the masses don't have access. So two coups, the president assassinated. And Haiti has just been abused in every single way possible because of what it means to the kind of international system. And so that is exactly what created the conditions for this popular uprising to occur. I mean, if you look at the speeches of Aristide back in, you know, the 1990s, he spoke very similarly to how Jimmy Cherizier speaks today. He talks about, you know, this, they both talk about this tiny percentage of the population has almost all of the wealth. And that's an unlivable, that's an untenable situation. But the difference is Aristide he didn't have weapons. He didn't believe in using arms in order to obtain or to achieve his vision for Haiti. Barbecue does. Barbecue is a former cop. He's not afraid of weapons. He knows how to use them. And that's basically the difference. So where Aristide was couped twice, And now he's in Haiti. He was basically allowed to live by the United States, and he lives quietly, and there's a university that he runs in some way, and you know, does good things, but it's not revolutionary. It's kind of a Band-Aid on the gunshot wound. And so he's kind of basically irrelevant. And now Cherizier steps into the limelight as, let's actually change this country. And, you know, we will defend our sovereignty. We'll defend our borders. Any foreign force that comes into our country to attack us, to, you know, do horrible things to our population, we'll fight them.
Wow, a double coup on the same person. I would say that's at least uncommon in world history. All right, Dan Cohen, independent journalist and filmmaker, founder of Uncaptured Media, thank you so much for your time and insight today.
Absolutely, pleasure.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.